Welcome to the World War One at Home podcast with me, Helen Mark. For terms and conditions, go to bbc.co.uk/podcasts. When we think of Belfast shipbuilding, the name that usually springs to mind is Harland and Wolff. But over 100 years ago, there was another mighty shipyard. Workman Clark and Company, known locally as the Wee Yard, stood on the site now occupied by Titanic or Paint Hall Studios, home to blockbusters such as Game of Thrones. The yard made merchant ships and during the war turned out two M29 class monitor ships for the Royal Navy. It also achieved fame as the place where one worker, John Moyer, set what was quite literally a riveting record that caught the attention of the King himself.
My name's Harry Johns. I'm a third year war study student at the University of Kent. We're currently stood just in front of HMS Caroline, and off to my left is the Titanic Studios, or the Paint Hall Studios, which is built on the former site of Workman and Clark's South Yard, where they're now filming the current series of Game of Thrones. Workman and Clark was known as the Wee Yard in Belfast, despite the fact it wasn't particularly small. I mean, during the war there was 12,000 men employed, so you can imagine there was a considerable number of men coming here day and night to work. In 1914, Harland and Wolff are given the contract to build a number of monitors for the Royal Navy, and William Peary, who is Director of Shipping at Harland and Wolff, realises that he doesn't have space to produce two of these monitors, as he's given the contract to build HMS Glorious as well. So he comes over the road to Workman and Clark, asks them if they have the space, which they do. They have two berths free to build these two monitors. These monitors are then built within 8 weeks. They're from the keel being laid, they're then fitted out and floated away and taken off to Gallipoli to serve there with the Dardanelles expedition. Monitor ships were all special in the sense that they're completely different to what the Royal Navy at the start of the 20th century are building. I mean, you think of the Royal Navy in 1914, you think of dreadnoughts and battleships. Monitors aren't anything like this. They're shallow draft vessels designed for close-in coastal support, used to bombard enemy positions with high explosives, whether it be troop concentrations or fortifications. This is why they're used in the Dardanelles in the attempt to break the Turkish forts which are guarding the straits of the Dardanelles and to try and push forward onto Constantinople. The procedure for using monitors is not necessarily for them to go in first, but is more that they operate in ones or twos at a range outside of the enemy position. In many cases, at least in the Dardanelles, they would operate from behind an island and they would fire using shore stations as their observation post, and they would fire over the island using high angle fire, or it could use its range on its guns to outrange shore positions. Most shore positions in the Dardanelles were light mountain guns or howitzers that, whilst yes, were effective at short range, couldn't match the sort of 5-6 mile range of the 15 or 14 inch guns found on some of the later monitor classes used. Workman and Clark itself, the yard, was founded later than Harland and Wolff. It was a smaller yard than Harland and Wolff and employed fewer men. It still outproduced Harland and Wolff on a number of occasions and was more than capable of producing large ships, whether they be naval or merchant. A man in the yard, John Moore, holds the record for the most number of rivets driven home in a 9-hour shift. I believe it was 11,209 rivets, and this is not using mechanical processes. He's doing this with a hammer himself, so you can imagine this is hard work. It's not easy. The rivets, it's a case of you're standing there with your hammer, there's an apprentice in front of you with an asbestos glove, someone's heating the rivet up in a brazier down on the deck, throws it to the apprentice catches it almost like a baseball with the asbestos glove, pushes it into the hole, the man hammers the rivet home, and then when it cools, it contracts and pulls the two steel plates together, forming the skin of the ship. Oh, it's an impressive feat, no doubt. I mean, in his seventh hour of his shift alone, he does 1,400 rivets. So you can imagine this man has come out and deserves a few pints at least after doing this shift. Moore's efforts were clearly well recognised across the country. The King telegrammed to say, "The King is glad to hear of John Moore's record achievement in riveting." Edward Carson, the former First Lord of the Admiralty and a renowned Ulster politician, telegrammed to say, "It is splendid and will show the Hun that Ulstermen will continue to use all their powers to defeat the murderous efforts of the U-boat." I mean, it's not only did he receive telegrams from politicians and royalty, he also received a £50 cheque from George Clark, the director of the yard, and this just shows that the efforts of these men were being recognised for what they did, and that Belfast shipbuilding was a key industry in the war effort. After the war, I believe, the yard started to wind down. It goes back to its standard pre-war merchant practices, but then in 1935 the yard shut down and Harland & Wolff becomes the only shipyard left in the city.
The Paint Hall Studios in Belfast. To hear more stories and find out more details about the war, go to bbc.co.uk/World War I.